We all want to look nice, but doing so is easier said than done. Putting together a wardrobe of pieces that mix well and last is always a challenge. That's where Quince shines. Premium fabrics, considered designs, and everyday essentials. I actually have a bunch of clothes from Quince, and they've been fantastic. Quince has the everyday essentials with quality that lasts. Lightweight cashmere sweaters, short-sleeve Mongolian cashmere polos, linen bottoms and shorts, tees in 100% Pima cotton and European jersey linen. These versatile pieces that make wardrobes actually work season to season. What's great is Quince works directly with top factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're not paying for brand markup at fancy retail stores, just the quality clothing. And they only partner with factories that meet the rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. I used Quince recently to replace some of my work clothes, and it was a great move. The pants don't wrinkle up and ride up like my former formal wear did. I'm more comfortable than ever as I move from airplane to rental car to trade show floor to meeting room, etc. But what I like the most is the cost. These new clothes look good, they feel expensive, but they're actually affordable. So stop overcomplicating your wardrobe. You don't need a closet full of options. You just need a few pieces that actually just work. Right now, go to quince.com/40klore for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's a full year to build your wardrobe and love it. And you will. Now available in Canada, too. So don't keep settling for clothes that don't last. Go to quince.com/40klore for free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/40klore.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This sad guy.
Today, we'll be starting our coverage of the Great Bronze Marines, the Minotaurs, with a focus on their history, the mysteries around them, along with a dive into how they function and their lore. For those who don't know, 40K Lorecast is a weekly show in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Like and subscribe. It's been great. You all have been doing it. Our algorithm is rocking and rolling, so appreciate it. And if you haven't done it, do it some more. Great. Link in the show notes to our YouTube channel for our bi-monthly Q&As. We just did one recently. Our other show, The History of 40K. And if you want to support us, we have a link to our merchandise and, of course, our Patreon. Our Patreon helps us out a lot with this show. The Patreon helps us get audio equipment, helps us expand more into YouTube despite us constantly failing with those expansions. But one of them is going to work, goddammit. Massive thank you to everyone who has contributed to our Patreon. You guys have really aided us incredibly in this. For those who haven't, if you want to, you get this show and the History of 40K completely ad-free, and it's only $4.99 a month, or still $4.99 a month, but it's warmer. I realized Brad constantly references it, so we might as well give Guam a glow-up.
Yes.
Guam is lovely. And if you're going to build a naval base in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, might as well build it in paradise. It's located just west of the international dateline, for those who don't know. And it's been a military outpost for the U.S. since 1898, when the U.S. won it from the Spanish in the Spanish-American War, except for that little three-year period where the Japanese had it and were total dicks during that period of time. They were, holy God. But it is also a paradise. The average temperature is 85 degrees Fahrenheit for those of us with use a real temperature, but or 29.5 C for all you weirdos. And interestingly, it has the tallest mountain on Earth, technically, because Guam is on the Mariana Island chain. So Mount Lam Lam is measured from the seafloor, which is kind of cheating because it's on the Mariana Trench. So it's 1,300 foot elevation, but it's technically 38,000 feet high, so 11,500 meters, which is a little bit BS. Yeah. But fun note.
I'm going to start measuring my height while standing on things.
Yeah, exactly. Bread's on the chair. Therefore, it's the chair counts.
Yep.
But for those, we do have listeners in Guam because we have mostly, I know you have probably military, but for those who are there, Guam is also a major MMA spot in the Pacific. And if anyone's looking to train there, go to Steel Athletics. It's over in Tamuning. If you're there, go find JJ. He's the owner there. And tell him you know me. Because, or you listen to my podcast, you'll blow his mind. JJ and I trained jujitsu together. Yeah. Well, for like, he owns the spot. JJ did jujitsu there for 10 years. He's a good buddy. He moved out to Guam to open the gym out there. And he's a great guy. I think he's a Ranger reservist now too, but great guy. If you're on Guam, go check out Steel Athletics. All right. Lastly, our Discord. It's also in the show notes. You should also join our Discord. Lots of people are there. Great spot for the, if you want to ask us questions, tell me all the stuff I got wrong. I took a lot of heat for that Blackbeard comment, and I'm going to stand by it. Just come with it. I like dying on stupid hills. But more importantly, it's a great place to interact. It's really been improving a lot recently. We're getting a lot of people coming in there. We have another painting competition coming up soon. But we got a lot of stuff for great literature advice, just great camaraderie. People just trying to hang out, learn more about the lore, and just meet other people. Get in there, join. It's completely free, like every Discord should be. No one should charge for Discord. It's free. I'm just going to state it over and over again. I hate when people charge for Discord.
You haven't said that in a while, too.
I know, and I haven't yelled that in a while. I'm going to bring it back. Don't charge for Discord. Don't charge for things that no one charges you for. That's a dick move. Anyway, all right. Speaking of dick moves, surprise, we're not talking about the Minotaurs today. Brad is super upset about this. We're actually covering the Lords of Terra because in order to cover the Minotaurs, we have to cover the Lords of Terra. And I started writing it and decided, suck it, Brad. We're doing the Lords of Terra. And the next episode, we'll do the Minotaurs.
Hooray.
Yeah. So this is actually a surprise episode of the Lords of Terra. Yeah. So
what's really great is getting ready for a cast, and then we do a different cast.
Yeah. Grab your nitroglycerin tablet because it's party time, Brad. Literally has them. None of you can see this on the camera. Brad actually just pulled out nitroglycerin. All right. Let's see what we can do to Brad's heart rate. So I actually...
Let's talk about why we have to talk about the Minotaurs first.
Yeah.
Or sorry, talk about the Lords of Terra to talk about the Minotaurs, because the Minotaurs wanted... Sorry, the Lords of Terra, which we will now dump into...
Yep.
Wanted a Patsy Marine to go do Marine things, or do Lords of Terra things with Marines. And now we're going to talk about how much they suck. They've always sucked, and they always will suck till the end of time.
I mean, yeah.
This is the longest set of show notes we've had in 4 to 5 months.
Yeah, because the Lords of Terra are fascinating.
They're fascinatingly awful.
All right, so the Lords of Terra actually do... I like this history, because it's kind of fun to go into, mostly because it's just circular of terrible ideas becoming more terrible ideas, becoming, predictably failures.
Let's talk about how they started. Because first off, Emperor takes, this is Reclamation War over Terra, takes everything. He never does anything to the nobility. And a lot of this nobility class were just, hey, you get to stay nobility if you join as part of my side.
So, with the Emperor, GW writing is very, very Britain-based. It's meant to resemble 19th century Britain massively. So the Emperor and Malkador, they start consolidating power as they're moving through, but they realized they couldn't destroy the nobility class. They could clip the wings a little bit, but if they destroyed them, it actually would cause a bigger problem. So as they accumulated lands, they gave them new titles, new tasks, so they could still feel important, but never give them any real purpose or meaning.
which is smart.
But they also had kind of a lot of resources. So they still, because they kept giving them land, effectively, you know, it'd be land back in the day. But they still had a ton of resources because they did want them to do stuff.
They needed them to. I mean, the truth is, like, the Emperor and Malkador, they couldn't, and we'll talk about this more later, they couldn't just control the populace. They still had to have people in charge. And it's easier to take the people who were already in charge and let them still be in charge and just have them not stab you in the back. And so that's, they also needed their kids to make the custodes. That's also a thing too. Did help.
Well, man. Also, they,
that means, became, that means they someone also, was Valdor's dad.
Yes. But they also, they had.
I bet you Valdor killed him. I bet you Valdor killed his dad. By, no idea, but 100%. Yeah.
Doesn't even matter. He, yeah. In my lore, he did,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. 100%.
But yeah. You got to figure that also they pulled some of the early Marines from these places too. You know what I mean?
Of course.
From different places of Terra. But the things they needed people to take care of the populace. Can take care of resources that they're going to need when they start pushing out into the Great Crusade. This is what they start with.
Yeah. So let's go with the very first inception of it, which is called the Senatorum Imperialis. This is the governing body made up of chosen nobles across Terra. This is before the Great Crusade. This is during the, why can't I think of the name?
The Reclamation Wars?
Is it? Yeah. This is during the Reclamation Wars. So this idea was actually pretty genius. When it comes to adding nobles to the fold. Because one problem that they were always going to have was the nobility that they just conquered were thirsting for power. The whole history of Terra with the techno-barbarians and everything was everyone was trying to get as much power as they could get.
You call this genius, but like...
This is genius.
Sure, if your genius idea is to grab the backstabbiest of backstabbers and put them all together so they can't backstab you.
Exactly. he killed the backstabbiest ones. But what he did was the Emperor created, you know, he basically put himself and Malkador all the way at the top. But then he created almost like a middle class, for lack of a better phrase, of power underneath him and said, you guys can all be here. And some of you can be upper middle class and some of you are lower middle class of power. And then you can all just stab the crap out of each other in here as long as you leave me alone. He basically made trickle-down economics that doesn't, by the way, doesn't work. But side note, for a different cast, I'll go on.
I'm going to go with my ultra rare reference. He did a Chinese downhill. There are no rules. And yes, that is from Hot Dog the movie. Go look it up.
It is from Hot Dog the movie, which I've sadly seen. Yes.
But he just tells them, hey, what are the rules? There are none. Don't mess with my stuff and stab each other galore. And you could, how do you go up in the rankings? Do stuff that I don't want to hear about. Also, make it so you don't interrupt what I'm doing.
Yeah.
He doesn't even care. There's a free-for-all going with this.
Yeah. Well, and he gave them all a very, very basic, here are four of you get to be in charge. Well, actually, not four of you. He said, there are four jobs someone can have. Yeah. That's what he said. Here's four jobs. I don't care who gets them, but they're going to be done.
If it's the same guy when I come back.
Yeah. But they're all going to get achieved. That, and this sets the stage, by the way, for the entirety of the Imperium. There's a job that has to get done. The job had better get done. I don't give two Fs who does it. So anyway.
I don't think that the Emperor even called these guys by their actual names. I think he just chose, you know, Ted, Billy, Jimmy, and Don. And those were the names that he gave to them. Yeah. They're like, that's a different guy. Don't care. Is everything still on time? Good to hear. You could be standing on that guy's dead body right now. As long as I'm getting my troops and my supplies, I do not give a shit.
And so let's talk about the first four Lords of Terra, which is called the Magisters Temporal, were the Master of the Administratum, the Grand Provosti Marshal, the Arbites, the Chancellor of the Estates Imperium, Money Guy, and the Lord Commander Militant of the Imperial Armies. Duh. So let's talk about them because it's kind of fun. So the first Lords of Terra, you know, these people were meant to handle the day-to-day of the Imperium, just super basic level. Money, administration, keep the order, make the military work. But from day one, there is drama. And I love this because, by the way, if you want to know more about this.
No shit, there's drama, John. You have, again, a bunch of guys that are getting their job by any ruthless means possible. Is there going to be some issues? Probably.
Yeah. This is awesome. All right. But these do want to call out, suck. We get a lot of comments about like, where do you get this stuff from? Valdor has a book. Go read it. It came out in 2020. A lot of this comes out of the Valdor book. It's actually one of the cooler books if you want to learn about this era. So we have these four ones. The first one we'll talk about is the very first master of the Administratum, who sets up the Administratum to be what it is today. His name is Noam Retravia, and he came from a very powerful noble family in the Americas, who smartly joined the emperor like on day one. They took one look at him and were like, yep. Like,
this guy's going to win.
Yeah, we are investing on the ground floor here. These guys are buying Bitcoin in 2002. Like, that's how they saw this one.
Yeah. He got his whole cards and went, I'm all in.
Yeah. Also, oh my God, yeah.
This guy is one of my favorite and least favorite because he's actually very intelligent. This guy has a plan. He rocks out.
He's your favorite, but he's also the worst because he's what sets up all of the bad things. Yeah.
Everything. Yes. Yeah. This guy is, hey, is this going to make things slightly better for me and worse for every single person in existence? Yes, I'm going to do that. Yes. And he does.
Yeah.
And Noam, he immediately does.
Yeah. Noam was quite an intelligent talent. And but at the present point, light year selfish. So he looks around and basically looks at all the potential jobs and realizes that this Imperium is going to get big. And a big thing is going to have bureaucracy. So I'm going to put myself in charge of the bureaucracy because that'll make me the most powerful person in this thing outside of the emperor. And I'm going to make sure that everything goes through the bureaucracy.
Yes. And it had the things he set it up so that you could effectively skim money off everything.
Yeah.
Everything could be slow. He made it inefficient purposely to steal easier.
Yeah.
This guy sucks so much.
Oh, it's amazing. And we're back to him in a second. Because while you had him, on the other side, you had this guy, Pelops Dravagdor, who was the head of the Estates Imperium, who was massively over his head. Pelops, his job was to find all the money to fund all the crap the emperor wanted to do, which is a lot. Because remember, like, the emperor still needed money. Like, it's one thing to remember is that, you know, the Imperium is not slaves. Like, there is imperial currency. People get paid for their work. There's a lot of debate over the value of it. And there were a lot of Bolshevik style revolts over the last entirety of the period, but there is a currency. And Pelops, though, his job was have the money to do all the weird things the emperor and Malkador want to do, like build a hidden fortress under the Himalayas. Right.
His Dr. Evil plans.
Yes. Over and over again. Yeah.
Yes.
So he has, that's Pelops' job is I have to build a lair in a volcano. That's going to be incredibly expensive.
He's doing all
expensive.
The Peter Griffin stuff too. Just constantly having I need a helicopter with my face on it. But this guy is so dumb. One, he's watching the guy that works with him obviously steal money, can't figure it out. He doesn't really know how to do his job.
But that's what's great. Well, he got it probably because Noam helped him. So Noam, the guy we just spoke about, of course, comes in and says, hey, buddy, I got an idea for you. I can use my bureaucracy to get all the money you need. Just so don't worry about it. I got you. You just sit there and tell me where it goes. And Noam effectively just makes Pelops his puppet. And goes, cool.
I think around the world are mad that you compared them.
In one move, Noam now controls half the government. On the other side, though, which by the way, this is how the Lords of Terror will function forever. A couple main people will genetically rule over a bunch of the other Lords of Terror who are too weak to really exert themselves in any way, shape, or form.
And I just assume that literally Pelops had a hat that just said chief awesome dude in charge of awesome stuff. And they just high-fived him.
I view Pelops the way I view most of the people in Idiocracy.
Yes. 100%. Like,
yeah. But guys, it's what plants crave. Brando has electrolytes.
This is like the beginning. By the way, this novel is one of the reasons. There's many reasons I hate the Lords of Terra, but this really kicked it off when you're like, hey, day zero, the guy in charge of the money was given a PlayStation 5 and told to go sit in the corner and that he was the best.
Yeah.
And you're like, what else do I do? No, that's it, man. You're awesome. You're so awesome. You don't even need to do anything.
The one I found funnier, though, is, and this one's tougher to pronounce, Kleesanwaya.
Ooh.
So with Kleesan. Kleesan was the first Lord Commander Militant, the head of the Imperial Army, which sounds super powerful and super cool until you remember Malkador existed.
Well, back it up. And Malkador was pretty hands-on about things.
Yeah. When Malkador wants to be hands-on, he's not just hands-on. Remember we said, like, you're a puppet? Think of this one more as the literal sense of Malkador's hand is actually up and inside you. Like Malkador basically was like, yeah, Kleesan was a figurehead at best. Nothing Kleesan did happen without Malkador telling, I don't know if it's a he or a she, so I'm gonna go with she, without telling her exactly what to do. Like, well, and
it's so funny because Malkador, being the scammiest of scammy dudes of all time, knows that Noam is doing all kinds of sketchy stuff. So he just has her show up every time and just go, I vote whatever you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Kleesan's job was to say no every time Noam said yes.
Didn't matter.
Didn't even matter. Yeah. Just her entire job was to cause problems. But my favorite one of all of them, because it's a really cool story, is Woma Kanaware. She held the title of Grand Provost Marshal. She was the head of what later became the Arbites. And she's a really cool story in this novel. Actually, probably the best story in this novel, if I'm being honest. And she was in charge of upholding the law of the Imperium, which you're going to discover in a second really sucks because of who's in charge of the Imperium. Like, really sucks. So Uwoma is a super cool character. She came from a region. It's supposed to be in Africa, but it's really the Balkans because it's constantly being conquered by different techno-barbarians, like, over and over and over again. And all she's learning is, like, oh, people in charge suck.
But weirdly enough, Mommy has a wild sense of morality and ethics and wants to do
that. That's what she learns. She learns that this power corrupts. And so the emperor sees her and goes, perfect. I'm going to put this person in charge of keeping justice and order in my, you know, in my kingdom or my imperium, whatever you want to call it. And this is one of the few people I can do who will not actually corrupt.
Yeah.
But the problem with the emperor, though, is he doesn't actually think this one through because she's going to dole out justice fairly. So let's fast forward now a decade or so before the onset of the Great Crusade. Remember when the Thunder Warriors all tragically died to a man fighting the last battle of Terra? Yeah, it's 300 of that bullshit.
Everyone knows that. He went, hey, what are we going to do? Weirdly enough, Valdor and some custodes were also there, and they decided that they wanted to see who could kill the most Thunder Warriors.
Yeah, the real thing was Valdor and like seven custodes called a meeting with the Thunder Warriors and got very stabby in that meeting. But a few of them got away, including the Primarch of the Thunder Warriors, which don't get excited. That Primarch just meant general. What is a Primarch? That meant general. But his name's Ushtan, and he was the head of the Thunder Warriors. Ushtan and a chunk of Thunder Warriors escape Valdor's slaughter and they hide out. But they send word back to the High Lords of Terra what had happened. Uwoma, along with the head of the biotech division, whose name is Amar Astarte.
I refuse to say that out loud.
What?
I just
get it.
So
get it. Decided to do something about it. Now, this is a little bit complicated, and we're going to have to cover this story more in some later bits. But Amar Astarte helped create the Thunder Warriors and the Custodes, but her greatest legacy was the Space Marines. But when the Primarchs got warped away, she wanted to kill all the Space Marines because she's like, look, without the Primarchs, this project is doomed. They're going to destroy the Imperium. Cough, cough. She was right. But Uwoma gathers this like Imperial police force and starts heading towards the Imperial Palace because it was new there. Also,
she did this very good timing. The Emperor and Malkador were off world.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah. We're not marching on the palace of Endor. She was going there to arrest Valdor because she did not blame the Emperor or Malkador, despite it obviously being their call. But she was going to arrest Valdor.
You can't
and
blame
try
either
him.
One of them because she wanted to actually arrest. And she knew if she was going to arrest the Emperor Malkador, they were going to get killed instantaneously. Well,
and I overread into this. I think this was her kind of, she wanted to test the Emperor. She was going to arrest Valdor and basically hold him on trial in front of the Emperor and Malkador of like, hey, this guy just murdered a bunch of people for no reason. What do you want to do about it? Which the Emperor would have been like, yeah, he's fine. Shut up. But that's a side note for a different day. What I love about this, though, is that as she's going towards the Imperial Palace, she gets joined by the Thunder Warriors, their Primarch, but also these like pseudo Thunder Warriors, pseudo Space Marines called Castellan Exemplars, which were the special like side project also, of Amara Stardust.
So let's tell what actually is going on here. Hmm? She might have got Valdor to talk. He's not much of a yapper, by the way. Not a lot of conversations coming on him.
Tucky, tucky.
But if she wouldn't have got joined by all these guys, I think that everything wouldn't have happened as bad as it did. But effectively what happened is you showed up with all of this force and Valdor went, oh, I didn't know this was Boots of Mighty Ass Kicking time. Until you showed up with this many guys.
I love this because, I mean, they show up with this great plan. We're going to march in there. We're going to grab Valdor. He's going to surrender. We're going to hold him a trial. And Mike Tyson has a great line about this. Everyone's got a good plan. They get punched in the face. And Constantine Valdor had that punch in his pocket. So they approach it with all of them. There's probably 1,000 of them or 2,000 of them come walking up. Valdor walks out solo and looks at them and just says, look, so you guys should just surrender now. And they're looking at him like, what?
Darth Maul style.
All solo. Yeah. Seriously, you guys are going to surrender now. This is stupid. No. And they're like, no, we're not. He goes, you are going to surrender now. Trust me. And they're kind of like, no, we're not. And he went, all right. And then 10,000 First Legion Astartes come pouring out of the complex. Because they were ready. Yeah. This is full blown, you know, Death Star episode 6. Like they are fully operational and just wreck everybody. I mean, kill everything.
Quickness.
Although Valdor does battle the Primarch of the Thunder Warriors, they have a nice little chat during it. And he does put the Primarch of the Thunder Warriors out of his misery.
Not a conversation. Yeah. He just talks shit to him.
The other weird part of this, though, is that Amara Stardust sneaks off during this and gets down to the lab where they're building the Space Marines, and she has a bomb with her, gets confronted by a custode, and then suicide bombs the lab to take it out. But this made no sense, because this is the year 30,000. Right now is 2026, and I have a full cloud backup of my computer. So, yeah. So she blew it up, and the Emperor was like, yeah, it's in the cloud. I don't know. You blew up all my data. Yeah. Still stored. Like, neat. Still have the project. Although, then it gets lost later. I don't know. Because then, like, when Raven Guard want to get a copy of it, it's like, oh, you have to go over there. It's hidden. Like, you couldn't just go to Microsoft and like, all right, pull it up. There's no Google Drive you could have pulled it from.
I do love the fact that Valdor gives her clemency.
He does, yeah.
Well, but I like this fact because effectively what he says is, you're just too good to be part of the Lords of Terra.
This part is great because at the end of it, everyone's dead except for Woma. She survives, basically. Well, a lot of them survive. Valdor stabs all of them. But yeah. Woma, it's not like one of them like, oh, magically, she's the only survivor.
But she's the only one who's stabbed. By the way, Valdor does start to talk while he's finishing people off.
Yes. Like, just like, hey, you know, you're kind of a good person. Stab. And maybe this isn't the right job for you. Stab. But he does tell her, like, look, I'm not going to kill you. I'm not even going to punish you. The only thing, but you don't get to be a Lord of Terra anymore. But I'm going to ask you just to leave basically the Imperial complex. And he settles her outside of that and gives her a very good life. She lives out the rest of her days in peace. And
but he sets the stage, though, and just kind of tells her, you aren't morally sucky. You cannot be you.
Yeah, exactly. what I like about it is that he doesn't hold her at fault at all. He recognizes everything she did was correct.
But and, also for the job that the Imperium, you can't be.
Yeah.
She's like, he gives the agent speech from Serenity where you're like, I can't live in this world. I'm a monster.
Yeah.
This is what he's just like, man, if you're going to be in this job, you have to be terrible.
Yeah. And so there goes the first and only good Lord of Terra. So let's move on.
And then we have 12,000 years of suck. Right.
So now it's going to evolve.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
One negative to 40K is how much online shopping I need to do at random websites all over the place. I have like 20 logins spread across websites I have to go to all the time to grab this thing or that thing. But thanks to Shopify, that's getting a lot better. Whenever I see that nice purple button, it's great. I know I can just click and go. No making more passwords, no adding addresses, just buy the thing I want and move on with my day. So if you're thinking about starting your own business, start looking at Shopify. You can get started with your own design studio with hundreds of ready-to-use templates. Shopify can help you build beautiful online stores that match your brand style. You can also get the word out like you have a marketing team behind you to easily create email and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. What if people haven't heard about your brand? Well, Shopify can help you find your customers with easy-to-run email and social media campaigns. Or if you just get stuck, Shopify is always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. You can tackle all these important tasks in one place, from inventory to payments to analytics and more. No need to use multiple websites trying to figure out what platform is hosting this tool or that tool. Everything's in one place, making your life easier and your business run smoother. And like I was talking about earlier, that iconic purple Shop Pay button that's used by millions of businesses around the world. It's why Shopify has the best converting checkout on the planet. Start your business today with the industry's best business partner, Shopify,
and start hearing. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/lore. Go to shopify.com/lore. That's shopify.com/lore. 40K Lorecast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings may vary. Not available in all states or situations.
So Terra is conquered. The Emperor sets his sight in the galaxy. But now there's going to be a lot more moving parts. And so to achieve this, we have to expand out from the Magister Temporal. So that gets dissolved. And we get two things. We get the Council of Terra and the War Council. The Emperor, Malkador, and Valdor. That's a fun council. And then they add Kelbor Hall, and then they keep adding Primarchs as they get discovered. But we're not talking about that, because that would give Brad joy. We're gonna talk about the other side, which is all Lords of Terra. So at this stage, they're called the Council of Terra, because that was about their level of power. They were a council who would be told to shut the F up whenever the Emperor got upset.
Let us set the stage a little bit, because we haven't talked about it in a hot minute. And one of the big things about it is at this time, the Emperor and Malkador are wildly, they have their talons and everything. They keep everything very, very close to the vest, which obviously becomes terrible once both of them are gone. But at the time, there's a lot of things that they're doing that make it so they don't care that this is effectively a puppet council. They don't give a shit, because everything they care about is they have their hands in and they're personally doing it. Both of these guys are Wile E. Coyote super genius. They can manage so many things at the same time, and they are.
Well, and the problem is the purpose of this Council of Terra, the whole reason they exist, is to do the stuff that the Emperor and Malkador aren't dealing with at that moment of time. Everything they do at some point, the Emperor and Malkador deal with, and they kind of set on a path and go, okay, I've started it, just finish this. And then they leave. And that's the idea. And they kind of sit up there. But as we'll get to later, this will burn them.
Well, it burns them. Also, one, because the people in that they put in charge are terrible. Two, they also go, hey, you follow what I was doing. And yeah, cool, man. You're an next gener. You're a generational genius. I can't do what you were doing. Even right. if I didn't suck, I still couldn't do what you were doing.
But let's talk about the actual structure, because I do like want to talk about the very first Council of Terror. I do find funny, because the very first thing that they do is the head of it, the first Lord of the Council, is of course Malkador. Yeah. Now, but and then Malkador goes, all right, and below him he puts Valdor as the Captain General of the Custodian Guard. And the reason he does this is a not unsubtle hint, reminder that there's a bunch of custodes on Terra. And if you idiots try even one stupid thing while we're off world, these golden bananas are going to come in here and make sure you understand you. We may be on the other side of the galaxy, but they're not.
They don't have any actual role besides just threatening at this point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. There's no purpose to them in there other than to kill the Lords of Terra if they do something stupid.
Right.
They have no. They have no purpose on this council. Valdor's with the Emperor. He can't even vote, or he's usually not even around. And he's just like, yeah, but if you guys do anything, all of my guys come in here and like pull and you in you. From limb. Yeah. Just, yeah. So like, so we're clear. Yes. Yeah, so we're clear. Awesome. But then we get into the actual piece. So obviously we still have the Adeptus Administratum. We still have the Estates Imperium, the Lord Commander Militant, and the Lord of the Arbites. Those are all there. But we've added a bunch more. The first one is, well, the Astronomicon's there now. So that's important. So they had, so we can't travel. So now we have the head of the Astronomicon. Because if that thing doesn't work, no one goes anywhere. This person become Korhan Hrusula is the first master. Yeah, of it. So separate from them, but also equally important, is the Navis Nobilite, which is the Navigator Houses. I think it's
probably more powerful than that, because the Navigator Houses become dynasties and super powerful in and of itself.
Well, it's hard because I don't think you get one without the other.
It's just as far as people that can wield stuff, though, the houses become super powerful, even though they're not
the
council, I'm saying.
So the difference is, I would say, is this is where I'm agreeing with you, is where is the head of the Astronomicon, just the head of the Astronomicon. That's a dude who's in charge of that. The Navigator Houses are the mafia, because they just sit there and they're like, yeah, if you guys want to ever do anything, you need us. You can't do any of this without us. You know, whatever we say
so
goes.
So much money and power. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. And they they're still incredibly powerful right now.
Yeah. And they're also super messed up.
You breed psychers for a long time.
They're not great. You also have the astropathic choirs and sanctioned psychers, just basically general psycher presences in general. So to this end, Nemo Zingmeng becomes the first master of the Adeptus Telepathica. We'll cover him actually probably later this year when we talk about the Siege of Terra. He has a pretty big role in that.
It's a huge role.
It's pretty cool.
Especially he's in the new books.
Yeah. At the same time, the Imperium is growing. So now we need supplies. So the merchant fleet, which we've covered before, comes into existence. And so given the size and scope, the head of the merchant fleet gets a seat in the council. The one I found interesting, though, is so does what's called the Order Hospitalière, which is also randomly, I think that's French, but that's not important. This is the group that oversees all the doctors, nurses, et cetera, in the Imperium. And given the Imperium is on a war footing then, still is, it makes sense. But I was actually surprised it wasn't part of the Administratum.
Yeah, which they didn't get folded in, but they eventually get folded into the Sisters of Battle, which I thought really weird.
It's not the Sisters of Battle. Remember, the Sisters of Battle are part of the Adeptus.
Part of the Sororitas.
Yeah, so that's why. So the Adeptus Sororitas become, they're part of this later. It's a weird, they move around a little
because
bit.
Because there's so many layers. When I think of Sisters, I think of the things that are all part of them, but actually, a Sisters
the battle's of Battle force. Nothing, yeah.
Is surrounded by six or seven other layers of.
Exactly. My favorite one of all this is the Adeptus Mechanicus. The story of the AdMech joining this is actually great. So the AdMech are currently not well liked in the Imperium, and that stretches back to the first time they were met.
You're not really changing anything, man. You're like, hey, man, no one really likes them right now. Yeah. And that's how it's been. Forever,
everyone has viewed them as weird and untrustworthy. And spoiler alert, everyone's been right the whole time.
100%. Every time, they're always doing something shady.
But the thing about the AdMech is they make big shit the Imperium needs, and they know it. And they don't really like being told what to do by some like weak, all fleshy, like squishy things. So one of my favorite stories comes from this era. So the AdMech joined the Lords of Terra during the Horus Heresy. They couldn't get in before that because they'd just been stalling tactics. And so when they went to join the Council of Terra, the idea was to show the loyalists on Mars that should they side with the Emperor, that he would respect them and treat them as an equal. So they give him a seat of power. But the other people with said seat of power didn't want to give them one because, you know, it's more power to give up. And even the other members of the Loyalist Mechanicum didn't want
to be part of it. Yeah.
Because they knew that if they joined the Council of Terra, they would then be part of the Imperium, which they didn't really want to be either, because they thought the Imperium was all weird too. They just wanted to play with the weird stuff they had on Mars.
Also, it's the middle of the heresy. Things aren't exactly going swimmingly for the Imperium.
Yeah. So all of this comes down to they actually try to assassinate the head of the Mechanicum who's trying to negotiate with the council in order to join it. So anyway, this all ends in this really hilarious scene, which is the Council of Terra call a session to debate the addition of Mars to the Council of Terra. And they get there and the majority of the council say no. But they go beyond saying no. They start saying, well, since Mars has fallen to civil war and there'd been an attempt on the life of the ambassador, the treaty that the emperor had signed with Mars is null and void. And it's pretty obvious that the people of Mars can't really govern themselves. So therefore, the only thing to do would be for Terra to govern Mars. And they begin debating with each other and yelling at each other which of them should be in charge of Mars. Yeah. And while they're doing this, the building starts to shake pretty violently, by the way.
I love this and the fact that somehow they infiltrated a Titan.
Yeah.
How bad are your scouts?
No one noticed because the Mechanicum kind of saw this one coming, and they brought with them the Imperator class Titan Magnificum Incendius, who is 55 meters, so 166 feet tall. So walking city, which walked up to the building they were all in, leaned down, at which point the ambassador from Mars went, "So are we getting in or not?" And yeah, they still have that seat to this day.
Yeah. That was an excellent negotiating tactic.
Yeah. Oopsies. But then we'll move from then to the post-Siege of Terra. So the Council of Terra mostly actually survived the Siege of Terra. A couple of the military guys died, but everyone else actually survived.
Real quick on setting this up, though. Everything is in disarray because we no longer have the Emperor and Malkador are both gone. It is a wild free-for-all. The only person holding anything together with anything is Bobby G right now.
Yeah, this is a little bit of this because the custodes bailed. They went, all right, we're going into the palace. We're going to secure the emperor, and we're not even popping our heads out for a while. Right. The Primarchs.
Remember how I said the emperor and Malkador held things close to the vest? Well, their vests are now gone.
So, yeah, one of them doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And one's disintegrated, and the other one is currently a flesh puppet on the throne going, oh, I'm supposed to fight a lot of battles. Great. But he's no longer, there's so many things that, again, they were in charge of that they were personally doing all the time. You have a huge vacuum of power. Bobby G is taking care of day to day trying to fix the empire.
It's even harder than that because the problem is you have all the Primarchs are back and they're split on what to do. Gilliman is like, hey, let's fix crap. Dorne and Vulcan are on time. Fine, we'll fix crap, but I got stuff to do. Korax actually had already left. Korax actually bailed immediately. The Lion and Leman were on their way out the door. But at the same time, the issue is the entirety of the Imperium is looking at the Space Marines with a, hey, assholes, like eye, because the Imperial citizens had just looked around. It wasn't Imperial citizens that had just stormed the castle. It was Astartes, like demon Astartes, but still That's splitting. It's still Astartes.
A lot of them look very Astarte-esque.
Yeah, looked an awful lot like you guys were just fighting us, you know, what the Emperor's children just did to the Gap. You know, this is
one of my favorites still.
Yeah, we have some opinions about you all, right? So the council is shifting a little bit and then looking at the Space Marines going, hey, these guys aren't necessarily the angels of the Emperor. They're kind of the bringers of doom. And their desire is also, one thing to keep in mind, this whole desire to go run out and chase down the traitors and go kill them meant that they were going to grab a bunch of resources to go do that. Resources that they could have been used to rebuild Terra. Like when Lehman and them left, they took a bunch of important crap with them.
Yeah, like that could have been used. It becomes even worse because the Council of Terra becomes
the Council of Reconstruction.
This is when Palpatine becomes the Emperor just for a while, guys. The Grand Council of Reconstruction gets a ton of new powers and ability to get stuff. And they're like, this is just until we reconstruct, and it should only take somewhere between 1 and 40,000 years.
Yeah. More importantly, this also is when they create the Senatorum Imperialis, which becomes the Lords of, that's what the Lords of Terra run. So Gilliman runs the Grand Council of Reconstruction, and he's able to do this despite the misgivings of the Senatorum because he had a hidden ally, the Assassin's Guild.
The Imperium uses such crazy, look, guys, I know that you're probably incompetent and corrupt, but these guys over here will stab you in the face.
It is amazing, though, when you look at the history of the Imperium, that the Assassin's Guild are actually one of the better groups.
They're like the good guys, actually.
Yeah, over and over again, by the way.
Sketchiest dudes in the galaxy are like, look, man, I know you guys kill people for a living.
Yeah.
But you're still better than these guys.
The council was actually against Gilliman. And then one of the guys, and we'll cover him later, got himself a seat on the council by telling the head of the administratum, well, everyone around you is an assassin right now, so I'm getting in, right? And then he got in. And then he told the rest of the council, we're going to do what Gilliman said, or we're going to get a new council. So those are your two choices. Yeah. And as always, I've said before, Gilliman did everything correct.
He did things too correct for a while, because everybody that's on this new, I'm just going to call them Lords of Terror because that's just what they end up being, everybody that's involved in this makes a wild amount of money and power. Like the next 100 to 200 years are just these guys not even knowing what did. They're Scrooge McDuck jumping into their piles of money. They have so much, which also means they become less and less effective, though, because nothing but prosperity has ever been in front of them. It eventually becomes the War of the Beast, which we'll talk about in a second. But yeah.
So what happens is Gilliman, though, sets it up well. They re-grab Luna, they reclaim Mars, shipping lanes, all that stuff. Stuff is rocking and rolling. And Gilliman also does another genius thing, because Gilliman is he is perfect, just deal with it. But he also understands diplomacy really well. And what he does is he made sure that as he was rebuilding the Imperium up, he made sure all the members of the Senatorum were getting wealth and glory. During this era, each of them were successful. Each of them were having their own little glow up. So all of them didn't want to backstab Gilliman because things were going well. And so this was going well. It's growing. But then Gilliman gets stabbed by Fulgrim and it all goes to shit. Let's fast forward a little bit. Gilliman gets stabbed in 121 of M31. Within a millennia, the Senatorum has been transformed into the nightmare that is the Lords of Terra. The 12 posts
dumpster of, fire.
Quote, great importance to the Imperium. 9 of which, by the way, will always be present. The Administratum, the Inquisition, the Minotaurum, Mechanicus, Arbites, Navigators, Astronomicon, Assassins, because you can't get rid of them, and Telepathica. They all kind of hold. And then these 3 others will kind of ebb and flow. Military leaders, Estates, Imperium, Merchant Fleet will move around.
Because they get absorbed a little bit. A lot of times, one of the other 9 are in charge of that. Because certain families become super, super powerful. To be fair,
yep.
You say that there's nine all the time, but sometimes those nine are not nine. They're like,
oh, it actually does go down, but there's always supposedly 12 yes. Lords of Terra. Now, it gets a little bit goofy because then you actually look at them. And then at this point, there were six. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I don't write the stuff. I'm repeating what's written. So the War of the Beast we covered, but in effect, we get to the War of the Beast and all these guys suck, like royally suck. Like these are Nepo babies running their dad's companies in the ground. So like Colin Farrell in Horrible Bosses is basically Warren Buffett compared to these clowns. Like it's that bad.
I was about to say that Colin Farrell would be such a step up from the Lords of Terra this time. Yeah.
They make absolutely no decisions other than letting the Imperial Fists deal with it, which causes all but one fist to die. The Imperial Fists become singular as a result of their decisions. And then the orcs arrive on Terra. They all freak out and do nothing about it. In fact, the only time they get their stuff together is when the Imperial Fists do a coup d'etat.
They don't get their stuff together.
By the way, they did.
The Fists kill everyone.
No, they didn't kill anyone. No, he just makes himself Lord Commander. They didn't kill everybody. He just threatened to kill everybody unless Corlund became Lord Commander. That's what happened. But the War of the Beast concludes, and the Imperial Fists decide that they're not going to rule the Imperium as a Space Marine. That's one thing. The Space Marines, by the way, have never been the Lords of Terra, except for very short periods of time. This is because the Space Marines are not meant to be. They are meant to be out fighting. They are not meant to be back on Terra ruling. So here's what you have to do. Your Imperial Fists, you're going to leave. And you need to leave someone to restore Terra. You need someone to do it the right way. Leaving someone who's pure of heart, with a strong moral compass, able to discern proper course of action no matter the difficulty. Someone who would value diplomacy and respect the values put forth by the Emperor. You know.
The head of the assassins?
Exactly. That's exactly who you put in charge.
Dragon Courage, who already murdered people on the council.
Yeah. So 546 of M32, Dragon Vengorich takes control of the Imperial Senate. And I love this part of Imperial history because it actually is funny. He looks around at all the Lords of Terra post-War of the Beast. And as a head of assassins, he had an intricate file in all of them and just goes, reviews everyone's strengths, everyone's weaknesses, and realizes the best thing for the Imperium is to kill every last one of them.
And he also does it the end of Godfather style. He kills them all at the same time and replaces a bunch of them with Kalidus assassins.
Well, that's my favorite part. Some of them he puts in new people, but he has that moment like, oh, I can't replace all 12. So he has Kalidus assassins take the spot of them. So it looks like, oh no, Ted's still alive. I don't know what he's talking about. Look, he's right there. Yeah, this is magical. And for 100 years, Vengorich rules the Imperium. Until the Imperial Fists swing back around.
Everything about this, because the Imperial Fists come in and go, oh, come on, man. Oh,
and then they have to. But then the Imperial Fists do it again. They land, fight, kill Vengorich, and leave. And they just leave.
Just leave. They don't do anything.
They just kill off Vengorich and all the current heads of Lords of Terra and leave. But Ultramarines exist. So a decade goes by and an Ultramarines chapter
Things
master
are bad, yeah, by the
along
way,
with 50 other chapter masters show up on Terra because this power vacuum, it turned Terra into like post Shikai China. If you don't know what that is, look it up. It's like the 1915 China. It sucked. But the Imperium's about to collapse. All right. The chapter masters they'll descend on Terra and they do this great thing. They basically go to Terra and say, all right, everyone who wants to be a Lord of Terra, raise their hand. And they all do. And they say, cool, meet us here. And everyone goes into this big meeting room. And a day or so later, there are 12 Lords of Terra and everyone agrees.
By the way,
those are the Lords of Terra.
Unanimously.
And everyone leaves and goes, yeah, those are the 12 people. We're okay with this. And the 50 chapter masters, remember, 50 chapter masters leave and go, so we're good.
I always thought that guy was right for that position.
Thanks, guys.
So did everyone else.
Yeah, we're all perfectly aligned on this situation. All right. So now we have another 4,000 years of the Imperium growing and festering and stagnating.
But you know, we talk about this. Technology stagnated. Mm-hmm. The ability to live in the Imperium stagnated horribly. Yeah. But the Imperium is growing crazily still.
Yep.
Even though we're losing everything. Also, during this 4,000 years, this is when it really sucks to be part of the Imperium, because Imperial life starts to blow.
Yeah.
Which is part of what makes this actually able to happen, which is Goj Van Deer.
Yeah. So the Imperial Creed starts to grow at a fevered pitch during this time. Also during this time, the Astartes become more and more detached from the Imperium, and the Custodes are hunkered down, keeping the Emperor safe. So the only people watching over the Imperium is the Imperium itself, which just opens the door for a colossal failure. Some point during the 36th millennia, because GW is not very clever in their writing, they decide that the Ecclesiarchy would have levied their own tax on the population. And I can go into the pros and cons of Lutheranism and redistributive tax system. It's mostly pros, you know, civil education based on leasing ordinance, blah, 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 basic framework. It is a basic framework of how most countries function today. One of John's degrees might be in this, deal with it. But the Ecclesiarchy in the 36th millennia went hardcore 16th century Catholic Church. Because the GW writers are all Episcopalians.
Between the last 1,000 years before this, though, the Ecclesiarchy becomes wildly the most powerful thing.
Yeah, but what I'm getting is GW basically was copying what the Catholic Church was doing in the 14th and 15th century.
In the Catholic Church.
Where we're doing, what do they call, we basically you're paying to not so you go to heaven, etc. This type of stuff comes into play. But the Ecclesiarchy starts dropping their own tithe on everybody. And what this does is it's putting effect a double tithe on planets. And a lot of planets can't afford this. However, at the same time, the Ecclesiarchy had built up their own military, big one. And so anyone who fails to pay the tithe, the Ecclesiarchy would declare them heretics and invade and just take it.
Were you actually talking about indulgences, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it was indulgences. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. You lost me for just a second. I thought you were saying something else, but it's
indulgences. I couldn't remember indulgences, yeah.
No, you're good. I thought you were trying to say something else, but go ahead.
No. All right. So during this time, around this era, the 361st Master of the Administratum was elected. This is Goj Van Deer. Goj sees the power within the Ecclesiarchy, but he sees untapped potential. The Ecclesiarchy had been using the power for influence and monetary gain, but he realized, no, there's way more here. So he went for it. He uses the Administratum to prove, air quotes there, guys.
By the way, so many air quotes we're both using. So,
well, I'll be honest. So he's going to prove that the head of the Ecclesiarchy was a traitor to the Imperium. But he kind of was. So, but whatever.
All of those guys were at the time, if you want to go full on.
But that's what I was going to say. Like, meh, yeah, 6 1 half dozen the other. But he sees this guy, Paulus III, calls him a traitor and executes him. He then shows the entire populace that the rot from Paulus wasn't just him. It spread all the way through the Ecclesiarchy. Only a noble entity such as the great Administratum could purge it of the corruption. So he declares himself the head of the Administratum and the Ecclesiarchy in order to purge the Ecclesiarchy from the corruption. And he begins a rather public campaign, by the way, of executing cardinals. And what I like about this, though, is that he's about to seize for himself a massive amount of power. And he had to disguise it a little bit, because he had to keep himself safe from the other lords. So Goj does this really clever maneuver where what he does at first is he basically plays up, I'm taking it to the Ecclesiarchy. Because don't forget, all the other senatorums hated the Ecclesiarchy because they had been gaining a ton of power and they've been flaunting it. So he's coming in and saying,
well, at the time, like this, though, because the church becomes such a powerful entity, and it's the church versus the state at the point in time, which you have these noble families, which are basically at odds with the power of the church.
Yeah. And so it looks like outwardly at first, he's just slapping the church down. And so all the other people are like, cool. So the church is basically going to lose their seat. Who cares? awesome. And he starts almost redistributing some of their wealth, because he doesn't care about the money. He's got the administratum. He's good. To the other lords of Terra. But the real thing he's doing, though, is he's taking control of what actually matters, which is the power of the ecclesiarchy, which is two things: their spy network and the populace. So one by one, he starts taking control of the other lords of Terra, because he got this incredible spy network to know all about them, but he's got the people too. So he can basically go to any lord of Terra and say, you're going to bend to my will, or I'm going to declare you a heretic and you're dead. You cannot stop me at this point. Turns out, though, he's nuts. Like, I mean, real nuts too.
Super nuts.
Like maybe chaos corrupted level of nuts, if we're being honest.
He also probably holds the most power that any non-Marine has ever held in the Imperium.
Oh, yeah. And over this time, he begins a campaign of slaughter throughout the galaxy. He does discover the planet of San Lior, which is Valkyrie. Just deal with it.
Sisters.
We went into this when we covered the Sisters of Battle, who in the end meet the Emperor, and they're super unhappy after they meet the Emperor with Goj, and make that very clear to Goj.
Oof, she
pushes him. Before any of that happens, the Space Marines have to invade Terra again, because in order to kind of pull Goj out of it. And I bring that up because it's kind of the last bit I wanted to talk about here, because it gets us set up for what we were supposed to talk about today and we're going to talk about next week, which is the Minotaurs. The Lords of Terra have an issue, and the issue that they have is military power. So the Lords of Terra wield incredible power within the Imperium, incredible power with almost no checks on it. They have really two checks on their power. One is the internal one, which they all hate each other. So, you know, there's that.
But the second one is the one that's come back to haunt them time and time again, which is the Astartes. That every time they get a little too big for their britches, the Astartes show up and go, yeah, we're real tired of you guys doing the nonsense you're doing. Yeah. Rat-tat-tat-tat on you, mother.
Yeah. And if you think about the history of Terra, Siege of Terra, Astartes, War of the Beast, you know, the Siege, Astartes. They put an assassin in charge. That was Astartes. Who killed the assassin they put in charge? The Astartes. Who killed Goj? The Astartes. Also, the Inquisition and the Ecclesiarchy are Lords of Terra. They have some issues with the Astartes over and over
again. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so the problem the Lords of Terra start running into is, what can they actually do about the Astartes? Because sending the Imperial military after them isn't actually that easy. Because A, the Astartes are much better fighters, so your casualty ratio is not ideal.
You go 1.2, because a lot of these guys are loyal to the Astartes. So you can't exactly grab them and go, yeah, man, I've been fighting with this guy my entire life. I'm not turning on him. No.
I'm like, hey, guys, I need you to go fight the Space Wolves. Yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm like, why?
No.
They saved my life.
Yeah.
No. Like,
I've been with this guy for the last 30 years, which is all of my life.
That's an angel of the Emperor. No. And so the issue they have is, every now and then they can prove, oh, these are corrupt, they can do it, but that's hard. They do have the assassins who can kill an Astartes, but assassins fight solo. And okay, you send a couple of assassins out, they'll pick off a few Astartes, but they will die for it. And they also are outnumbered by Astartes. And then the custodes, don't even ask. Don't ask.
And the sisters get a little bit tricky because of the fact that the sisters want to know what the holy reason fighting is. Yeah.
If the Astartes in question are corrupted, so the Astral Claws, yes, the sisters would have happily killed off the Astral Claws. No problem. But that whole thing we did with the Space Wolves, yeah, that wouldn't have gone well. That wouldn't have gone well at all. Yeah. So that's the issue. So they needed...
and I'll do a little replay on that. Also, when you make the sisters go fight somebody that they don't think they should have been fighting, the sisters will come back to have a talking to you about why you
sent them. And that talking is going to involve Melta.
Melta and maybe one of their many weird-ass pain engines
that
you don't want to be in.
So what the Lords of Terra needed, or effectively was their own Space Marine chapter, but a better one. And we're going to get into this a lot next week. So they decided to build their own. one that will do their own bidding, one that they could arm with extra technology and do up.
And the wild technology that nobody else was getting is they were using a bunch of stuff that had the big no buttons on them.
Yep. When you make the rules, there are no rules. That's kind of half the fun. And so next week, that's what we're going to get into. Now that Brad has a chance to collect himself from talking about the Lords of Terra for an hour.
God, I hate the Lords of Terra so much.
Next week, we're going to get into the Minotaurs. And we're going to, or maybe I'm going to surprise Brad and we're going to talk about just poisoning Space Marines for an hour. But
why would you do that to me?
I'm bored.
I had a bad appointment today. Stop hurting me, John.
It's fine. If the doctors can do it, I can do it. But yeah. But next week, we're going to talk about, we're actually going to talk about the Minotaurs, their mysterious origins, some of their appearances in the lore, which actually are disjointed. They've got a very odd history. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, oh, God, I miss the Imperial Armor books because some of their lore is really cool.
That's amazing. Imperial Armor books had great lore.
Yeah. I mean, the War of Badab, which I'm doing at Adepticon, which will be about when this episode's coming out, is because of Imperial Armor. That's where you get Carcharodons from. Oh. So anyway. So
yes.
All right. With that, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.